So I started doing this stuff for one reason, to drive new business. It was full transparency. That's what it was about. But then I realized that like, it doesn't work that way. We're talking about something, we're talking about brand marketing, not sales. And brand marketing leads to sales. And I'm the biggest believer in that methodology. But the moment I realized like, this isn't about sales and this isn't about converting people, then the whole thing shifted. What I did was I went, okay, this isn't about me trying to convince somebody about like buying my thing. I never even talk about my company. I can probably think of like, I don't know, a handful of times that I've ever even mentioned my own company or a product. And if I did, it was like within the context of it being an example of the thing I was talking about. It's always been completely unattached to my company, because I believe that if you do enough of that, people just think of you first when they need your thing. It just happens, you know?
Welcome to the Marketing Unboxed podcast. I'm Travis Scott.
And I'm Allie Schwanke. And we're here to take the lid off of what's good in marketing. Through our own riffing on marketing topics and guest interviews, we're going to pull out some of the basics of marketing and go deep into more complex topics.
So go for a walk or kick back and listen to what we're pulling out for you next. Welcome to another episode of Marketing Unboxed. I am your co-host, Travis. In this episode, Allie and I sat down with Nate Guja. Nate is the co-founder of Before You Apply. A couple of years ago, he made the leap into content marketing and brand marketing and building a personal brand for himself. In this episode, we talk with him about how he did it, how he talked with over 400 people in a year to really understand their problems, understand the questions they had, to really help guide his content and what he put out there to help people. We talk about some of the revelations that happened along the way, and how content creation and this view of brand marketing changed the trajectory of his career. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Marketing Unboxed. All right. Welcome to Marketing Unboxed. Today is a little different. Have our co-host, Allie Schwanke, with us, and she'll be part of the show from here on out. And would like to welcome Nate Guja to the show. Welcome, Nate, and glad to have you here.
Cool. Thank you. Happy to be here too.
So you know, we're just starting this podcast. It's going to be an evolution as we go. One of the things that Allie and I have talked about is maybe leading with a question that's kind of the same for every guest, and a way to really get to know people a little bit better. So for most of us, what we're doing now isn't what we thought we'd be doing when we were kids, right? So when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
That's an easy one. I wanted to be a pro baseball player. I grew up in California. I was a diehard Oakland A's fan. I grew up during like the Bash Brothers years, which was an incredible time for sports. And I was just like in my room, like my walls, I had posters all over my walls of like baseball players from that time, whether it was like, you know, obviously McGuire and Canseco, but I had like Will Clark and, you know, Frank Thomas, and like, which I got to say this though, which is amazing, because one of my wife's best friends is married to Frank Thomas, and her and I got together, you know, like when I was like 30, and we get this Christmas card in the mail, and it was like, oh my God, that's Frank Thomas. She's like, oh yeah, like Megan's married to Frank and whatever. Like, I've got to know. I'm like, you have no idea how big of a deal that is for me. But You know, so like I wanted to be a baseball player, and like I played ever since I was little, and like I almost played in college, and like that was like my thing, what I wanted to do. But I mean, I wasn't good enough to play at that level, obviously, but yeah, it was my thing.
Man, so Nate, I just went to my first Oakland A's game about 2 weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, it's, you know, got the whole shebang and the get up, but it's funny because I think people who are really driven, like entrepreneurs, they recognize the power of that discipline and getting better, but they eventually hit a point where they realize it's not going to pan out.
Yeah. So
how old were you when you realized you might need to have a backup plan?
Yeah. I mean, I was in high school. Yeah. I was in my circles. I was like a top player in Little League. I was a top player like after that. And then like, once I started getting a little bit like later into high school, there were some guys on my team who were just like, who were really, really good. I went to a school that had some really outstanding players. And then I was able to see like, even at their level, they weren't able to go to even like, you know, a top school, like after that, to go play and things like that. And like, I realized like, yeah, if I wanted to go play, like I almost walked on my freshman year of college, I went to a really small school, really small private school. And I almost walked on there, but like, I just like, I kind of like a lot, like once I got into college, I was just like into other things and didn't have like the drive. I was actually just talking to my neighbor about this, but yeah, I think like, but I mean, what you're bringing up, Ali, is like this, like, know when to pull the plug kind of a thing. I've experienced that a couple of different times throughout my career. It's like, it's hard. It's a really valuable skill to have, but at the same time, it's hard to know when. But like looking back, like I've done that a couple times, and like now in hindsight, like my instincts were right.
You and I talked a couple of weeks ago, and we're talking about your presence on LinkedIn and building your brand and following. And really impressive with what you've done. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got started on LinkedIn or social and building your.
Yeah, sure. So when I, let's see, kind of like to connect the dots a little bit. I originally, when I became really active on LinkedIn, I was working for an agency called Job Portraits. Then out of that agency, one of the co-founders of Job Portraits and I built Before You Apply. And then he and I are now building a new company as well. So, you know, there's kind of been this like evolution of things. Job Portraits, Before You Apply, all those companies like still exist. I'm very much involved with them, and they're like well and thriving, doing extremely well. But I was with Job Portraits. I was pretty new. No, I was like very new actually to the space that we're in, which is employer branding. I came in like really without any like background in the space. But like I speaking of connecting the dots, I looked at it, which was like now looking back, it was really beneficial that I didn't have any past experience. I had no baggage.
Nate, what year was that? Because LinkedIn, you know, people are like, oh, how new is it? When did you get on there? What year was that? Or like around the time frame?
Yeah. So 2.5 years ago. So, but when I joined Job Portraits, it was like over 3 years ago, probably.
Okay. So you were actually building your following. So it's not like you've been on LinkedIn for a decade and it's so like you've done this.
Gosh, no.
You've done this quickly.
Yeah. Very
quickly. Okay.
Yeah, sure. It feels like a long time, but you're right. Yeah. It has been like relatively quickly. So I came into this space with like fresh eyes, and I have a background in sales and marketing and, you know, building like a couple small businesses myself. And like, and I just like looked at our industry and was like, oh, I think there's a better way of doing this. I think there's like, I just like see it differently, whatever. And I just like, it clicked one day when I realized that it's just applying like a modern marketing approach, but to a different side of the market. And so I started developing like some like opinions about things. And then we were we had never done any kind of like marketing actually as a company. It was all organic growth. Sorry about the dogs. I can't do anything. It was just all organic growth, like 100% inbound. And the company just like was able to like build a name in the right circles and like, you know, get in with some VCs and like just kind of like become known as the go-to agency for this type of work in the Bay Area. And it just grew like word of mouth from there. But like we were having a retreat. We were like really small team. It was like six of us. And we would meet at our co-founder's house in Pacifica, which is right outside of San Francisco. We'd all like stay there together for like a couple of days and that kind of a thing. And so one day of our little retreat, we were trying to figure out like, what should we do from a marketing perspective? Like it wasn't smart for us not to do anything intentional and just to like leave it up to inbound. Like as great as inbound sounds, it can create a lot of inconsistency in a business like that.
It's never your one answer. I think people want it to be the one thing and you just let it run, right?
Yeah. You just like let it run. And then like, you just have like peaks and valleys. And so I raise my hand and I go, hey, I'm a big fan of LinkedIn organic. I think there's a huge opportunity there. Our buyers are like largely on there anyway, because they're heads of talent or maybe an EB leader, which is where like they spend most of their time compared to like other social sites. And I think we should run an experiment where I just start posting and we'll do it for 6 weeks and we'll just like see how it goes. And everybody was like, okay, that sounds good. I originally didn't want to do it myself. I wanted one of our co-founders, Mickey, who like has like, she had become known as like kind of this person in our industry. And I wanted it to be her and she had no interest in doing it. And she's like, you know, you should do it because like, you're really passionate about this and you have some things to say. So I told the team, like the team, they're all at the time, they were all ex-journalists, very, very talented writers. And so I told them, I'm like, hey, like you guys can't police my work. I need to have full autonomy over this. I just can't have anybody looking over my shoulder. I need to just like go and you need to trust me. And then I also told all of them, I said, you know, there's something that we all need to realize, that in the unlikely event that this takes off, you need to know that I'm going to hold a lot of the brand cred with this company. And that's a big liability to the company. I'm not an owner. And just know like that comes with it. And like, if I were to leave, it would be harder for you to let me go. And everybody was like, oh, we never thought of that, but we're okay with it. Like, just do it. I just wanted to get it all out of the way.
I'm wondering if that point, if they were like, well, how big does this guy think he's going to get? You know, you're prefacing this and you have like two followers or something at that time.
Yeah, I like, nothing, but I just like, I wanted to get ahead of it because I looked at somebody like Dave Gerhart, who at the time was, you know, he was at Drift.
Yeah. He's done great. LinkedIn. Wonderful.
And I never thought of Drift. I only thought of Dave. And I'm like, wow, at least to me, and probably to a whole lot of other people, Dave is Drift. I get Dave Cancel is a big deal founder and that kind of a thing. But like Dave Gerhart, like was Drift to me. So I just like wanted to let the team know, like, hey, there's some liability here if you guys even care. Nobody cared. And so I jumped in and I just started posting every day, like Monday through Friday, basically for 6 weeks. And it like started to take off really fast, much faster than I thought. It was about like 4 weeks in. And like, we saw that like, oh, people are like really taking to the stuff that I'm posting. We should probably keep going. And so what we did was they hired me to be their first salesperson. And then what ended up happening was we saw that there was like traction here, and then we can get into like what shifted my mindset and then the mindset that I, you know, communicated to the team. But we just started shifting more and more resources towards me doing that and taking more and more off of my plate to the point where we got to like, okay, Nate should just be doing like more stuff and like that, and much less of the things that we hired him for. It like completely shifted my entire role and actually shifted my entire career. But it was all because we just ran an experiment and really had no expectations and just were like, hey, if this doesn't work, it doesn't work. We'll try something else. But like, that was the first thing we did and it ended up working. Plus it was something that like, I really, really enjoyed doing. So it's a good combination.
And I think what you said about, we'll try it. If it doesn't work, that's okay. I think that's something that a lot of companies and people have a hard time with. They're so afraid of something not working that they don't even do it in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. We've always, like, even to this day, like now with our new company, we just think in terms of experiments because the ROI, like the upside is huge. The downside is very small. And so, and before you invest like a lot of resources into something, like you need to test and see if it even works. So like, I didn't even start doing video until, I don't know, I'm just going to guess, but it's probably like 6 months in. It was like way down the road. And like, I had some people like James Hornick, for example, like, you know, James Travis, he was like pushing me to do video. You got to do video, start doing video. And I'm just like, I don't know how to do video, you know? And like, I got myself to this point where it's like, okay, I'm going to start experimenting with video. And then I got budget and then I was able to outsource it. And I like hired somebody to help me with video. And then we ended up eventually bringing it in-house, but man, it had to evolve and we had to know that it was like worth pouring a little bit of gas on the fire, you know, before doing it. And that translates now into like how we develop product and everything.
Well, I think there's a couple of things in there, Travis, in addition to the whole experiment thing. But so one, the company was okay with you having your own voice and your opinion. And yeah. I think too many times the company wants these great results on LinkedIn, but they don't want to give employees their own individual voice and like, oh, forbid you to have your own reviews on things, right? One or two, you were passionate about it. Like you were willing to explore yourself and not be like, I need someone to train me on LinkedIn, please. You know, like you were able to just go in there and figure it out. And then, you know, you had, I think this might stem from some of the stuff you did when you were a baseball player, but baseball, to get good at baseball, you need to be swinging, hitting, fielding, swinging, hitting. Like you just need to do all the fundamentals repeatedly to get better. And with this, you just need to repeatedly show up on a daily basis and post something. It's not revolutionary every day.
Yeah.
But you just put the time.
Yeah. One of the reasons this early on, it worked well for me is because I'm an extremely disciplined person. Like just in my life, like I'm extremely disciplined to like probably to a fault in a lot of areas, but like it's just like something that is like it's come naturally to me. I don't have to force it. It's just kind of it's how I'm built. And so when it comes to something like this, the discipline, it was just like part of the process, you know? So like, if I told myself like, all right, Nate, like you're posting every day, then I was just going to post every day because that's just what I do. And like now, even to this day, like I have a very clear process for the way that I create content. Like it's methodical, but it works for me. And I realize like that some people are a little more like free with it and they like think of something in the morning and that's what they post. But for me, it's just like, I mean, I have so much content in the hopper that is like partially formed thoughts, fully formed thoughts, posts ready to go, backlog of like so many videos, I'll never post them all. So it's just like, it's already ready to go. It's just like this whole process, you know? And I think that's why I was able to stick with it. And I think like, if we're talking about like the personal brand type stuff, there's like two things that really separate the few that we can like kind of think of. We all have like a few people in our minds that we can think of, but like it's showing up over and over again with like a unique take. Like it's a unique thought, opinion, perspective that makes you think. which is really hard to do in and of itself. It's hard to do that. So that's one. And then two, it's consistency. It's easy to run with this stuff for a short period of time, but it is hard. It's hard. It's like, there's nothing easy about. And once you get into it and you're busy and you have work and you have life and you have priorities and things you have to get to, it's easy to go like, all right, like I'm not going to do this tomorrow. I'm going to take tomorrow off, or I'm going to take like a week off or whatever. And then it's just like, you're kind of done. It's just the consistency plus something original that makes other people think. It's that combination that gets people past that point that others like usually drop off. And again, it's like, it's not easy. And there have been so many times that I just want to stop because it's mentally draining. And it's like, it's social media and it is designed to break you down. Like what, and I mean that it is like, I think it is a very negative thing. And there's many things about it that I don't like. And it is very hard on your mental health intentionally. And so there's been like a lot of times where I'm like, I just don't want to do this anymore because it's, even if people like what I'm putting out, I really don't care anymore because it's not serving me. And I've had to have like a lot of like talks with myself and with other people about like, is this still serving me? Is this still serving what I'm trying to accomplish? And I've come to the point like where it still is. But that's something that has to be talked about, is like the nonstop notifications, the need to respond to every comment, the need to engage with other people's posts and stuff. It's just like, shit, man. Like at some point, you know, you got to like keep it in perspective and go like, you can't do it all.
Yeah. I think so many people forget about so they don't want to post on social at all because they're afraid of someone saying one thing negative back to them. Like well, they're just afraid right. of the one comment. Yeah. But when you start to look at the small gains you get from doing it consistently, with every small gain comes some sort of like negative byproducts. And yeah. as you amplify that, the byproducts just become a little bit higher and higher and higher. And then you're right. At some point you're like, is this a sunk cost fallacy? Cause I've put so much time into this. If I give it up now, you know, it's almost like, well, if I stop now, then what happens? And so you keep doing a little bit more and you have to kind of question whether or not your heart's still in it.
Totally. You do. And you're bringing up a really good point about like your heart being in it. Sorry if I'm taking this in like a weird direction. I don't mean to, but I think it's like, there was a big shift for me, like a big mindset shift. I don't know how like early on it was, but I realized, so I started doing this stuff for one reason, to drive new business. It was it full transparency. That's what it was about. But then I realized that like, it doesn't work that way. We're talking about brand marketing, not sales. And brand marketing leads to sales. And I'm like the biggest believer in that methodology. But the moment I realized like, this isn't about sales and this isn't about converting people, then the whole thing shifted. What I did was I went, okay, this isn't about me trying to convince somebody about like buying my thing. I never even talk about my company. Like I can probably like think of like, I don't know, a handful of times that I've ever even mentioned my own company or a product. And if I did, it was like within the context of like it being an example of the thing I was talking about. It's always been completely unattached to my company because I believe that if you do enough of that, that people just think of you first when they need your thing. It just like, it just happens, you know?
And if they don't know what you do, they just track you down because they're just like, I don't know what you do, but I've read some of your stuff and whatever you do, I need it.
Right. Yeah. It's just like, and that's what happened. So I realized like, oh, okay. This is about one, my industry doesn't get a lot of love. And outside of like this little bubble of people who talk about employer branding, largely like nobody even knows what it is or nobody cares. And so I want to help elevate my entire industry because if I can do that, then everybody in my industry benefits and some of that will filter to me naturally. And then I was like, okay, so one, that was like detaching from a sale. Then I got to the point where I was like, I'm just detaching from outcomes. I can't control this. All I can do is like put out what I think is the best thing that I can put out today or this week. But like, I can't control the algorithm. I can't control how many people engage with my post. I can't do any of that kind of stuff. And I'm sure as hell not going to like post something just for the sake of engagement. I don't care about outcomes. And like the greatest thing that's ever happened to me is having some posts that do extremely well. And then having some posts that like get 10 likes. It's the greatest thing because I'm just like, oh, none of it matters. It doesn't matter. It all balances out. Like who cares anyway? Then I got to the point where I'm like, you know what? I'm only doing this for me. I'm not doing this for anybody else. Because if I start doing it for other people, then I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. And I've gotten to the point now where I created a newsletter that's the same content that I post on LinkedIn, you know? And so now my newsletter has like a really good following. And I did that because I knew at some point, if I pull the plug on LinkedIn, I don't want to pull the plug on creating content because I absolutely love creating content. I love writing. I love spending an hour writing a post that has like 200 words. I love like obsessing over like changing one word because it's like what I do. Nobody cares, but I care. And it's this like this process that has helped me become better at writing, at thinking, at like looking at my industry. It has done nothing but benefit me because of the creative process. And I want to keep doing that. Where I do that might change, but I'm like, this is only for me now. Like, you know, and like, so I went through this evolution to get like more, like less and less attached to the things that too many people are attached to and allow me to focus on the things that just like benefit me. And as a result, I think it benefits other people more.
Yeah.
I would say, Travis, you've experienced some similar things in being in employment branding. And as you and I talked about that, I mean, is some of that, like, were the two of you building your brands at about the same time or kind of how does your experience compare to what Nate's said here?
Yeah. As far as employer brand and recruitment marketing, Nate has a head start by a couple of years. Because I just started really focusing on that topic specifically within the last year. Because I wrote a book about it and out of curiosity, nothing else, you know, I wanted to know more about it, kind of the hard way to learn, I guess. But I, like Nate, I enjoy writing. I never thought I would, or I never thought I did, until I started doing it every day. And it was the process. It was the sitting down, giving myself an hour to just put my thoughts out there. And it just changed the way that I thought about things. And, you know, I can relate to so much that Nate said, because, you know, whether it's posting things or writing every day, that act of doing it every day, whatever it is, anything, going to a batting cage every day, whatever it is, that act, probably more creatively this happens, but you just build that consistency that Nate mentioned leads to momentum. And then the momentum, I found, is what leads to the ideas frequently, because I think something changes. I mean, I'm not a scientist and I don't play one on TV, but from what I've experienced, something happens to your brain when you do something creative every day, especially writing. The ideas just flow. And yeah. I've found myself, I haven't written in a while, and it's that's that thing. I got out of it. I went on vacation for 2 weeks in June and my streak broke. I was writing every day. Not posting at all, but writing, because it was the process that I enjoyed. And that's kind of it sounds like you found. You enjoy the process, not the outcomes. And when I was in the heart of writing every day, I would wake up and, you know, right before you wake up, sometimes you're kind of in this weird dream awake state where you feel like you're awake, but you're not.
Yeah.
I would actually be thinking through what I was about to write that day. I went to bed and I had no idea what I was going to write the next day. But right before I woke up, it was clear. And I would do my thing, go down, make coffee, sit at my desk. And that cursor never flashed for more than like twice, you know, and I was writing. And so, yeah, I mean, I resonate with so much that you said. And there have been times where I've been caught up on the seeking reassurance, you know, and I think that's what social media is designed to do, is to play into that need to belong, that need to be liked, and that reassurance of people like me, they're engaging. And if that's what you focus on, the algorithms on LinkedIn especially are designed to, once you start, it will give you all this love, right? And then all of a sudden it pulls back and it's not showing your stuff to as many people. At least that's what I've found. And I've done some research and found that that's kind of how it works. At least it did, you know, a couple months ago. Once I realized that that's what it was, it wasn't just that my stuff wasn't resonating. Once I understood the technology that I can't control the algorithms and who sees what I post, it was easier to detach from that reassurance that I was seeking or the outcomes. And I think, you know, I've heard so many people say to really, if you do something you enjoy, it's usually because of the process, not because of the outcomes. The outcomes are just kind of the byproduct. And it's not luck. It's because you're putting in the work, but you're really focused on the process and that's what pays dividends. So yeah, I mean, I completely agree with and have experienced what you've experienced.
Yeah. Well said, man.
Yeah. I think too many, I mean, I've been a marketer the most of my career, but I didn't study marketing in college because I've come to realize, and Travis, I won't speak for you, but that a lot of folks that are trained in like the discipline of marketing, there's almost like this, well, this is the formula and this is how you do it. And really, I think marketing and like we're talking about LinkedIn as if it is a marketing channel here, but really what it is expression of voice and bringing value to a specific, you know, community based on experience. And then it's consistently providing a way to engage with folks and give them a voice. Because when you have an opinion, it naturally reciprocates someone's reaction, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I've always thought of marketing that way. And when you don't think of it that way, you're simply just standing on the corner at the megaphone, hoping someone responds to your crazy, like, you know, when you're in a tourist destination and they're like, the end of the world is coming. And like, everyone's like, oh my gosh, like stop talking. That is too much of marketing. And so I think it's hard to get folks that have been trained that that's the way to do it, to embrace the way that obviously you're seeing that works.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and even like going back to, I mean, I get so frustrated with my industry for that reason. I'm speaking from experience that like, there's so many things done to try to attract talent that are just like a waste of time and a waste of money. And it's all because it like, it's just like always been done that way. And nobody's looking at a better way to do it. And I'm going like, hey, I've done all the things like that we've just talked about for the last like half hour or whatever. And like, there's a lot of people who want to work at my company because of that.
Right.
Like just let your people do more of that and for the people who want to do it, just like let them off the leash. It's LinkedIn. It's not Twitter. Nobody's going to fly off the handle. It's like pretty safe. Like, you know, we're talking about like professional stuff. Just let people talk about the things that they care about. Because other smart people are going to follow them and they're going to go, oh, I want to go work at their company. But I see like people in the employer branding space, like want to take forever making sure that like the foundation is built and there's brand alignment and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just going like, fine, if you want to go and do that, that's great. But there's this like other way too that you can do. And it's going to work like a lot better and a lot faster. But this like, I mean, going back to like what you're saying, it's like, there's a difference between like practitioners who just like are always evolving because they're like actually like out there in the trenches doing work and seeing like, okay, like, oh, there's a new way of doing things, or we can experiment with something, and oh, this is working. And they're always like kind of moving forward. And then there's the non-practitioners who think like what you're talking about, where it's like, okay, we need to plug in into this system because that's the way it's always been done. And I think all it does is it like, it just like stifles progress and creativity.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. And I've heard, as I was writing my book, I actually happened to listen to Adam Grant's podcast. And in one episode, he was talking about cognitive entrenchment. And it just, the light bulb went off. And I had to write about it. I write about it in my book because with that industry, Nate, and a lot of industries are like this. Change happens, but the people who have been there, who are moving around and up and over, have never really been in anything else. And so they only know talent acquisition. They don't know marketing. And now there's a need to know marketing, and they're so stuck in this mindset that it's really hard. And when I went into writing my book, I think a lot of people will write a book and have a working title because they kind of know what they're going to write about. I went in, I had no idea what I was writing about. I was just talking to people and pulling it together, and I didn't have a title. And by the time I was finished, the only title that really felt like it fit was Think Differently, because I feel like the entire industry needs to think differently about everything, how to recruit, how to hire, how to keep people happy, and just, it's time to think differently and get some new blood into that world that hasn't gone through that chain, right? Starting as a sourcer, recruiter, moving up, and now they're leading it. And really they're salespeople. I know recruiters don't like to hear that, but they're salespeople. You know, I've been in sales and I've been in recruiting, and now I'm in marketing. I can tell you, it's a lot more like sales than it is marketing.
We're all in sales. People say that are just like lying to themselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was thinking about this. I was thinking about writing a post about it, but I was thinking of like all these marketing terms, and I'm like, all they are just like, what they really mean is just like hacking human behavior. Mm-hmm. That's it. And that's not a bad thing. It's just it's what it is, you know? But like, you look at everything from like, even like as simple as like word of mouth or conversion, or even like now, like product-led growth, like all it is just like, it's terminology that's attached to human behavior. And then doing things to try to, what's the word? I don't want to use the word manipulate because that's a bad word, but you know, to like encourage, like influence, that's the word, to influence that behavior. And I'm like, man, why are like more like psychology and sociology people in marketing? Because I think that's like what it's really about is like, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But like this idea of just like when you can understand your market or your buyer, whoever that is, when you can understand them better than in some ways they understand themselves, at least when it applies to like the thing that you do or the problem that you solve, you can like go, okay, the best practices may or may not apply. It doesn't really matter because like, I know the best way, but I just like, I don't think that enough people, especially like Travis, going back to like what you're saying about talent acquisition as it relates to recruitment marketing, I don't think enough people know their buyer or their market at that level. Because like when you do, the things just click. You just like, you automatically know what to do because you know them so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went through hiring. I mean, so just to give some background, Nate, I own an agency, we have 10 employees, and we went from being geographically focused to a region. So our hiring was limited, you know, mostly for people who could come into the office. Uh-huh. And then we had one employee who before the pandemic decided to move overseas, and we're like, yeah, we'll go ahead and entertain that. You're a great employee. We like you. Let's go remote. And as serendipity would play out, we ended up going remote before we needed to go remote. And then suddenly, yeah, obviously we went remote. And in that time frame, we've turned our team and shifted people out and actually moved nationwide. And so we've hired, I have four employees that are five actually that live outside of the state. I've got three employees that live outside of this city. Mm-hmm. And so we're now in this environment where I'm recruiting people that never have heard of my company.
Yeah.
I'm on the same job board as HubSpot's marketing jobs. You know, we're no longer in this little like region where it's like, oh, I know who that agency is. So seeing what people were saying in the interviews are like, oh, I watched every single one of your videos.
Sure.
I followed all your employees on social media. Like they went to go find out as much as they could. So they're not surprised when they are in the interview with us because they vet us as much as we vet them. Right.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of folks aren't listening to the market. And to your point, they're not thinking about what is it like to be in their shoes and how do I create a message or a invitation or a welcome mat that just creates a better conversation. They're thinking like, ooh, how do I convert 75 more job applications?
Right.
And that's not the right way to think about it.
That is not how you should be thinking about it.
Talk people through that a little bit on like, do you help them with their language even as they put together their plans or how does that work?
No, I don't know. You mean like as our, like for our business or like what our business
like
does,
if you're just giving some, like, let's say that there's some recruiters who are like, wow, Nate, you've been able to really drive your conversation on LinkedIn around employment branding. You know, what should I talk about?
What should you talk about on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think like I'm really surprised that there aren't recruiters who have like, let's look at technical recruiters, for example. Mm-hmm. Technical recruiters, an incredible technical recruiter is like, wow, they're amazing. They can speak engineering language and they're not, and like, maybe they are engineers like themselves, mm-hmm, in a way, but like just being able to communicate with engineers is just a skill. Especially it's an incredible skill if you're not an engineer. But I'm like, it boggles my mind why there aren't more recruiters talking about the industry that they serve. So like, if you're a real savvy technical recruiter, like why aren't you posting all the time about like technical stuff? Yeah. I don't know I'm a non-technical person, but like the tech industry, or about like coding, or about like all this kinds of stuff. Like, why aren't you talking like engineer talk, but like on LinkedIn to show like, mm-hmm, I'm a recruiter and like, I know my shit. Like, because that's one of the biggest things that engineers, like one of the biggest beefs engineers have with recruiters is like, they're very hard to recruit. Okay. Because they all have jobs. They all get paid really well. And in order for them to like entertain a conversation, they have to be like really compelled to do so. So if they take the time to go like, okay, I'm going to have a conversation with a recruiter, and then they talk to a recruiter who's just running them through a basic screening call and has no technical chops whatsoever, they're just like, are you kidding me? Again? Mm-hmm. Screw all recruiters.
Yep.
But if you're a recruiter who's just like showing up wherever engineers are, or you're a sales recruiter and you're just like talking about like the most innovative ways to like sell and about like, the SDR model is broken, or you're doing this kind of a thing or whatever it might be. All you're doing is just like showing like you have domain expertise in your industry. You're not talking about your company. You're not posting like company fluff stuff, whatever. You're just being like, you're just an expert. Top people in your industry are going to notice that and go like, okay, that's the kind of recruiter I need to be talking to about my next opportunity, but nobody's doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause back in May and June, I was in an Akimbo workshop called the copy workshop. And
oh, with like Seth Godin's?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah. I've kind of been an Akimbo junkie over the last for 2 years. And this is the first time I'm not engaged in an Akimbo workshop, and the first time in 2 years. So I kind of, it's time, the learning's done, the doing is starting.
This is your workshop. This is your practicum now, Travis.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Seth is, he's one of my most favorite people.
Yeah. He's definitely a mentor to me without knowing he's a mentor. He's constantly in my head as I write, as I think. His words are just kind of in my head. But the person leading this workshop, it wasn't Seth, but she said something towards the end of it that I hadn't thought about before. And it's exactly what you're saying. She said, people on LinkedIn, well, first of all, she said, copy doesn't have to be creative or cute. It just has to work and be effective. And so that was a mind shift for me. But then when it comes to, you know, and I think that applies to LinkedIn and everything we do. Then when she talked about LinkedIn specifically, she said that most people on LinkedIn will post content for their peers and not for their target audience. And she said, it doesn't make any sense to me. Mm-hmm. And as once she said that, and I became more aware of it, it's like, holy cow. Yeah, you're right. People are talking to their peers and not their audience that they should be talking to, where their expertise could really be. And I think that's more that seeking reassurance thing. Right. You're comfortable in your tribe of people who are just like you doing the same things. They can relate. And it's scary to step out and talk to a different audience, to put yourself out there of what you may not know. And I think people have a hard time with that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what I did to overcome that specifically. So I got into this. After I started to see people are resonating with my fresh takes on my industry, which at the beginning, I was nervous about because oh gosh, it's not like I have a background in the industry. People might just go, this guy's completely full of shit.
If it's not fresh?
Yeah. What if it's not right? Right. Who knows? So, but it did, it started to take off, you know, and then I after a while, it was a long while. Like I waited a long time before I was okay, I need to turn this into real relationships. So then I was okay, I'm going to start talking to people. So then I used my LinkedIn posts and people who had engaged with me for a long while, months, you know, it wasn't somebody engaged with me one time. It was I saw the same people kind of showing up. Mm-hmm. And so I'll never forget, the first person I ever reached out to was Anthony Jones. Anthony Jones runs global talent brand at Rockwell Automation. He's one of my most favorite people in the world now. And we're total buddies. First person I ever reached out to. And I went for let's go high. And I was hey, I love this industry. I'm super curious about it. Would you be up for just a call sometime so we could just talk and I can ask you questions? And he's just yeah, for sure. So he and I jumped on a call and I spent 30 minutes just asking him questions. And then he connected me with somebody else to kind of do the same thing. And I realized that people in the employer branding space, at least, are so open to stuff like that. So then I started using my LinkedIn post to find people who were following my stuff for a while and just reach out to them and just go mm-hmm. I want to ask you more questions. So what I started doing was I started using those types of virtual coffee calls to reverse engineer my content. Mm-hmm. So then, because I wasn't creating anything from scratch, I was just learning from people and it was going through me and then it was coming out in my way. But it was all things that people were telling me. It was gosh, these are the problems we're having. These are the things going on internally we can't figure out. This is what I wish I knew. This post you put out really resonated with me for this reason, whatever it might be. And then it was just this feedback loop. And people outside were going oh my gosh, we're having this problem. And I'm mm-hmm. going, yeah, I know, because people like you are telling me that you're having this problem, you know? So I use that. So it was like, it was my BS meter for sure. I was just like checking to make sure that I wasn't coming out of like nowhere and being like completely full of crap and trying to tell people, here's what you should do. Mm-hmm. That's not my job. It's like, my job is like to make you think about something new. And that's what I wanted to do. And so like, I kept using this feedback call and like, I went through my calendar at some point last year. And I realized that like over the course of like 12 months, I had like 400 and I don't know, about 450 calls with people. Nice. And I probably had like, you know, who knows, 700 plus calls, whatever, like since I've been doing this with people. And like, I got to a point where like my entire calendar was just like me talking to people in my industry, but like, I never tried to sell them a single thing at all. It was like, not about that. It was just like me learning. And then we developed like awesome relationships and people like really knew me. And some of the people I've talked to many, many times. And it was just like automatic that when they needed something that they knew,
you come to mind,
they come to me first and they're like, hey, can you guys do this? And if I could, then they became a client. And if I couldn't, I'd refer them to somebody else. But that's how I always knew my content was like,
yeah,
in the realm of being right.
What I love about that is I'm going to take your situation. And if we put it into a corporate setting, what would have happened is if, okay, Nate, we got enough awareness now. Now we need to start converting some of these folks into meetings.
Yes, so it would for sure.
Can you put a goal on the calendar? And like, again, I don't like that methodology because I think so much of it is if your sights are set on, you need to have 10 meetings this week, then you're focused on that number and you're not focused on what you like, the curiosity that drives the innovation. Right. And I think that that curiosity and that feedback loop is like, all of us know it's the bedrock of like good product development. It's the bedrock of good content development. Like it's all the same.
Yeah. I think sales is just a byproduct of the brand. Right. And the brand is a long game, and a long game that turns into something consistent in the short run. That if you do it long enough and you do it well enough and you're consistent and you build that momentum, like we've talked about, it does start to become predictable. Like you said, you get every month, you get people asking you about things or for things. And the timeline, they may have come to you this month, but you may have talked to them 18 months ago or 6 months ago. It doesn't matter, but you know now just by being out there doing what you're doing, building your brand, that all of a sudden it's now pretty consistent and predictable that you'll have at least one person a month reach out to you.
Yeah.
And it's a sale, right?
It's like, you're talking, when that happens, you're talking to people, you're not even, it's not sales. I was like messaging with like Chris Walker about this, like one time where I was like, we were kind of talking about this concept and we're like, it's like not even sales. Like when you have those conversations, you're talking to people who have been like following your content for a really long time. They already completely understand it. You're not having to educate anybody on anything. They're coming to you and saying like, hey, we need to do this thing. Can you guys do it? We're like, yep, we have this thing. We can do it. And like, here's the next step. You're talking about like 60%+ all the way down the funnel, because all you've done is just like provide them with all of the education up front. But Ali, like what you said was such a great, you had such a great point about like traction will happen and then the company will try to like turn that into something that it's not, and they'll force it. And then suddenly the person doing it will cave to that pressure and the whole thing then like blows up. And you can see it happen. You can see when people's content starts turning, you're like, oh, and Travis, this is one thing that happens. I know we're like, sorry, we're going long, but man, there were some people who I followed when they were in-house, they would be like a VP of sales or like a CMO in-house. Their content was incredible because like they weren't, their consulting business was not dependent on them bringing in money. Their content was amazing. The moment they became a consultant, their content went straight downhill and it was all about them like trying to sell their thing. And I'm like, you were the best follow. And now everything has changed.
It's that cologne of desperation, which like, mm-hmm. you know, we all talk about it in dating where it's like, you know, you want to go out with the person that has like a boyfriend currently or a girlfriend currently, but you don't want the person. You're like, ooh, why are you single? Yes. So it happens on LinkedIn too.
It does. All right.
Yeah. And I think that's that pressure going from the long game to the short term. And whenever you go to the short term, it affects everything, right? So
I know it does.
Well, I will say last pun on this is my personal like stake in the sand is marketers talk a really good talk, but then when they move and I'm Travis, if you're not already feeling this, you know, when you move on to your own and now you're responsible for both the P&L and the marketing and the sales and the operations and all the things, you kind of have to go, is what I was telling my clients, do I believe that enough for me to do it?
For sure.
And I think that's interesting for us and not important to say right now, but you know, we do in my company, I was determined to be able to look a client in the eye and say, I do what I'm telling you you should do. And that's been life-changing. Yeah,
it is.
Absolutely. You have to eat your own dog food.
Yeah, for sure.
Great. Well, yeah, thanks, Nate. Really appreciate it. Really great conversation. And I knew it would be based on, you know, knowing you and following your stuff. I'm a big fan. For anyone that wants to connect, you know, how can people find you?
Yeah, obviously LinkedIn is an easy place. Why don't we just stay there?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Why dilute the brand, right?
Yeah, I know. I basically accept all connection requests. Unless I know it's going to be a guaranteed connected pitch, which you can tell.
Yeah, from a mile away.
But yeah, LinkedIn would be great. Anybody can reach out to me. I'm always down to like chat about this stuff.
Perfect. Well, yeah, thanks a lot. And I really appreciate the time.
Yeah, for sure. My pleasure.
So that wraps up this week's show. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to learn more about today's topic or guest, we've got some links for you provided over in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and share your review. That really helps others find the show and get it into their network as well. So until next time, I'm Allie.
And I'm Travis. And remember, when you get outside of your comfort zone, it just means you're headed in the right direction. Keep an open mind and keep learning. And we're out.